From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is U.S. Farm Report.
Welcome to U.S. Farm Report. This weekend, we're on the road for the 2023 Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and it's the finale here in Rochester, Minnesota. Here's what's in store over the next 60 minutes. It's a battle of the East versus the West.
I'm Michelle Rook on the Western leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, where drought and heat stress were the story this year.
And in the East, dry weather means the crop may be running out of steam.
This crop here in Iowa County, this is still green. This is drying down. The crop we saw just a few stops ago there, that's dying down.
So did it change the outlook for this year's total crop production picture?
I'm going to remember this as a soybean year.
It's a boots-on-the-ground look at what the scouts saw as they trekked across the Midwest this week and potential impact on the markets. And in John's world,
satellites or surveys?
U.S. Farm Report, presented by Pioneer. What's next happens when the testing grounds meet the proving grounds. Pioneer, what's next happens here.
Now for the news. On Thursday, we wrapped up Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and on Friday, Pro Farmer took the data gathered along with other information and numbers to come up with its national production estimate.
Pro Farmer taking into account numbers gathered throughout the tour, along with other factors such as weather, crop maturity, historical differences, and areas outside of the tour this week. And Pro Farmer's yield estimate at the end of the week coming up with a national corn average yield of 172 bushels per acre. That's below USDA's latest average forecast of 175.1 bushels per acre. For soybeans, Pro Farmer is estimating an average yield of 49.7. USDA is currently projecting a 50.9 bushel per acre national yield. Now let's quickly go state by state. Starting in Iowa, Pro Farmer estimating 197 bushels per acre for corn and 55 bushels per acre for soybeans. Illinois, it's over 200 bushels per acre in corn. Soybeans in the state coming in at 62 bushels per acre. Nebraska, that's 173 bushels per acre on corn, 52 on soybeans. Minnesota, 175 bushels per acre for corn and 46 for soybeans. Now in Indiana, a good number for corn at 194 bushels per acre, 60.5 bushels per acre for soybeans. In Ohio, one of the most impressive parts of the tour, it's estimated at 192 bushels per acre on corn, 57.5 on soybeans. South Dakota finishing at the bottom, 144 bushels per acre on corn and 41 bushels per acre for soybeans. We'll take a deeper dive into these numbers coming up with Chip Flory and Brian Grady. And whatever may be lacking on the tour, well, a farmer in Georgia may be able to make up the difference. Lee County producer Alex Harrell just harvested what's considered the biggest soybean yield in ag history, a whopping 206.7997 bushels per acre on soybeans. Yeah, you heard that right. That shatters the previous world record of 190.23 set back in 2019 by another farmer in Georgia. And with the University of Georgia Extension agent along for the ride in the cab, they watch the big numbers flash across the yield monitor. You can read more about that story on agweb.com.
Well, scouts on the crop tour facing sweltering temperatures midweek as a dome of heat moved into much of the middle of the country, sending temperatures into the triple digits. The heat, not just a concern for crops, but humans and livestock. USDA's Meat Animal Research Center updating this map for areas of concern for cattle heat stress. The areas in red on Tuesday considered an emergency territory. And as you can see, most of the country's fed cattle were in the bullseye of the heat wave. Cattle producers like Derek Pohl of Dorchester, Nebraska, doing all they could to protect their livestock. He says in this video that he posted online that he's hauled almost 15,000 gallons of water so far to try to keep up with the animals and keep them comfortable. He says the lots aren't pretty, but they're keeping the cattle alive, and he adds that they were thankful for a small breeze. Meanwhile, other areas of the country were dealing with a lot of rain falling very quickly. That's because Tropical Storm Harold weakening into a tropical depression Tuesday night after making landfall in South Texas, bringing with it strong winds and rain, leaving thousands without power. And while the storm is dropping a lot of rain, it does have some positives, including relief from long-term drought in the Rio Grande Basin. Meanwhile, Southern California starting to clean up from Tropical Storm Hillary. The area seen flash floods and mudslides, and Bakersfield One Vineyard worked to bring in as much of the harvest as they could before the storm hit. But they say they didn't get everything and report they are already seeing damage. Another crop that could be impacted is almonds. One grower saying they'll have to push harvest a week due to the almonds being too wet. Palm Springs, California saw more than 3 inches of rain from the storm, breaking the desert city's all-time daily summer rain record. Well, drought conditions further south are leading to a backup at one of the world's busiest shipping lanes. There were reports earlier this week that backup at the Panama Canal was impacting up to 200 ships on each side of the corridor. Reuters reporting some ships are delayed nearly a month, pushing spot shipping prices up 36%. Severe drought limiting the amount of water available for getting large ships through the channel. Owners have the option of carrying less cargo or shifting to alternative routes, which can add thousands of miles to the trip. More than 14,000 ships crossed the canal in 2022. Russia appears to be keeping up attacks on Ukrainian ports and grain storage facilities. Ukrainian authorities reporting Russia hit the southern Odessa region and the Danube River, resulting in one grain storage facility catching fire. It destroyed a reported 13,000 tons of grain. However, the fire was swiftly brought under control. The attack also led to the destruction of 9 Russian drones. That's it for the news. Well, there's no doubt it was a hot one on Crop Tour this week. So how much of a break will we possibly get from the heat? We'll have a check of your forecast coming up next. Well, time now for a check of weather. Meteorologist Andrew Whitmire joining us this weekend. Andrew, it was a miserable week for Crop Tour, even up here in Minnesota. But now the concern is if the crop is going to get any rain. And right now it looks like not all the models agree on that forecast.
And we are finally in time going to get this high heat to finally start to work its way out of the Great Lakes Midwestern states and out of parts of the Corn Belt regions. But we're going to see this further expanding back off towards the Plain States, Four Corners, and even into parts of the Rockies as well. And unfortunately, that's going to mean rain chances are going to be very, very slim here. It's going to be very timely where those showers and thunderstorms do decide to set up as we round out the last few days of August and head on into the first weekend of September, going forward into Labor Day weekend. Looking at the jet stream here as we go throughout a brand new week here. Again, the last few days of August are upon us before we flip this calendar over into September. By late week, we're going to be watching a nice trough developing up across parts of the upper Great Lakes states that may offer a little spurts there of a few scattered showers Monday into Tuesday. Meanwhile, a nice ridge building off towards the west around the Plain States, up around the Rockies as well, down across the Four Corners. And that's pretty much going to limit the shower and thunderstorm activity over the course of at least the start of the week. And then we are watching potentially of that ridge trying to break down just a touch here as we go throughout to the mid and latter half of this upcoming week. And that may start to provide a few more timely showers and thunderstorms for parts of the northern prairie. And notice how on the jet stream future track tries to maybe expand a little bit of that heat a little bit further back off into the Great Lakes Midwestern states and much of the Ag Belt again as we flip that calendar over into September. Looking at the outlook here, though, for the rain, and again, the rain is going to be missing through much of the country, not where we want that. Again, we want at least some timely showers and thunderstorms. This is good for getting hay bales done, but outside of that, again, we really do and need the added moisture. And as we go forward and looking at our precipitation as we go throughout to the tail end of August here and going now just past Labor Day there, notice how we're still keeping those browns there, still keeping that drier weather across much of the eastern half of the country. Meanwhile, they'll be watching a few scattered showers and thunderstorms on the western side there of the Rockies as we end out this month. Looking at the brand new root zone map, I'll go ahead and step off the screen so you can see it. And again, where you saw the remnants there of Hillary off towards the west coast, that is again where you see lots of blues, lots of inundation of water. But meanwhile, the Plain States there starting to get some browns, and that's where the browns have basically remained all summer long. And again, for the Ag Belt regions, the Corn Belt regions, that is, it's going to be very timely on where those showers and thunderstorms set up this week.
Thanks, Andrew. Well, what impact did all of that heat have on the crop this week? We'll have a firsthand look as we join Pro Farmer to get their reaction to Pro Farmer Crop Tour this week.
The 2023 Pro Farmer Crop Tour on U.S. Farm Report is brought to you by Pioneer. Pioneer combines cutting-edge research with one of the largest local testing programs in the industry to help farmers succeed. Pioneer, what's next happens here. And by BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Welcome back to U.S. Farm Report this weekend. Every year, bringing you the show from Pro Farmer Crop Tour, the 31st year of Pro Farmer Crop Tour. And Chip, this one is definitely going down in the books.
Oh, it certainly is. Even before Pro Farmer started running it, I was out on Crop Tour. 1988, I remember going out on that Crop Tour when in the middle of a drought. 2012, I think if we had the genetics in the field that we had in 2012, the crops this year would have looked a lot similar to what we saw that year. But here we are, 2023, we've got some extremely stressful conditions, and I'm telling you, between the management that the guys are putting on the crop and the hybrid and varieties that are available to them right now, the ability of both the corn and the soybean crops to build a yield has been unbelievable. The question is now, can you hold on to it?
Well, and Brian, there was a lot of talk about 2012, kind of in that June time frame, before that derecho blasted through Illinois. We're seeing those dry conditions, talking about, is this 2012 or is this 1988? Well, here we are in Minnesota, and there are some talks that this is similar to 1988.
Well, I think to some degree in some areas. And what made 2012 so special in a bad way was that it was so widespread.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got pockets of it this year. So I don't think it's apples to apples comparison by any means. And that's the big thing. And Chip alluded to it. And I think that the key is that we built big yields in some of these areas ahead of this extreme heat. And that was the story of the week in terms of Crop Tour in my eyes is the extreme heat, record heat indexes across the central corn belt as we were touring through.
Chip, have you ever seen a crop this mature?
Yes. Yeah, 2012.
Yeah, 2012 when they were running combines.
Right. We saw combines. Now, I don't know if we've seen as much corn already chopped as we've seen as we saw in southern Nebraska this year. So the harvest is underway. It's just being chopped. And I think part of the reason that they're doing that is they're going to have to cut more acres to fill a pit this year, and I don't know what that's going to do the harvested acres percentage.
Brian, you left for Ohio last weekend, and then on Thursday, you went through eastern Iowa. You went through your home area. How quickly did the crop change this week with that heat?
Unbelievable. 5 days and unbelievable. It seemed like it was 5 weeks on the change, and I honestly couldn't believe it. And you know, we didn't experience the extreme heat out in the eastern Corn Belt. We had a great day on Monday, a really pleasant day on Tuesday, and then we got into the heat, but these guys got cooked out here. I mean, Chip had it every single day on the western side.
Yeah. There's been this question, is the crop drying down or is it dying down?
Oh, it's dying.
Dying down.
Where is it dying down specifically? What pockets did you really see that take place, Chip?
South Dakota, Nebraska, West Central Iowa, southeast half of Minnesota.
Brian?
That leaves me with eastern Iowa.
Yeah.
it wasn't Ohio, Indiana, or Illinois for the most part.
And it wasn't all bad. I mean, you started out in Ohio, and Ohio got rains this week. How was that crop in Ohio?
Ohio was impressive. The number one takeaway for me this year on Crop Tour from the eastern side was that the Ohio crop, both corn and soybeans, is impressive, and they got rains. They got rains after we came through, so they need time and they need rains, and they got one of those already this week.
What was the biggest surprise for you in the West, Chip?
In the West, I just felt terrible on Tuesday, going through southeast Nebraska. And the reason I did was because guys came back that day, and I wasn't in corn that day. I was sampling soybeans. But they came back, and they basically said, listen, every field you went in, the ear's hanging already. The bean crop, it looked like we were watching it die while we were out there in the field. And I think, as it turns out, that's exactly what was happening, because just two days later, that crop looks a lot different than what it did when we were there on Tuesday.
Well, there's still a lot of question marks, And so how does this change the overall picture? And we'll look at demand. We're going to do that coming up. But stay with us. We need to take a quick break, and then we'll have much more right here on U.S. Farm Report. Well, during Pro Farmer Crop Tour each year, scouts gather more than 1,700 samples of corn and more than 1,700 samples of soybeans. But as we look at the years ahead, could technology help us get an even better grasp of the size of the crop? That's John's World this week.
About this time of year, there's often a change in the farm atmosphere. The relative inactivity of late summer gives way to serious preparation for harvest, and the size of that harvest is frequently on our minds, like constantly. Early hints of what is in our fields are the hottest gossip items whenever farmers gather. During my career, and especially the last few years, official estimates of how much is out there from this growing season have been viewed with increasing skepticism. Some doubts are based on the age of traditional methodology, some on suspicions of deliberate tampering, and some on theories of interference from outside factors. One idea that has gained traction is that the surveys may not be as accurate as current technology, especially satellite imagery. This could be true, especially since the number of satellites has ballooned as the price to put them into orbit has plunged. The technology packed in those satellites has improved vastly as well. Satellite maneuverability now makes it possible for real-time stationary overhead observation with everything from sophisticated radar to multiple light wavelengths and to astonishing optics. One popular idea with farmers is sophisticated technology could create better, more frequent crop estimates than in-field surveys like the USDA does or even our own crop tour. Maybe so. Technology also seems to offer less human intervention to counter growing distrust of official institutions of all kinds in the United States. For crop reports, the USDA struggles with public misunderstanding about the need for identical methods year after year to generate data comparable to the past. Much of agriculture also operates in years, not quarters or months. While the agency is cautiously introducing better technology, it could be a long time before that's how crop production reports are routinely generated. Not only do you need several years of side-by-side reporting to assure that this new technology is actually an improvement, the same big problem remains. How do you know the right answer? It turns out there is no substitute for an annual calculation of grain sold and bought and stuff stored on the same date each year, the fabled January 31 report. Right now, the least statistically reliable number for that definitive report is farmer-held stocks. Better crop reports will need first more farmers sending their most accurate numbers, not just different politics or hardware.
Thank you, John. Well, up next in Tractor Tales, it's not just any bantam. It's a bantam that sparks a lot of memories. For one woman, we have that story with Machinery Pete in Tractor Tales next.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Tractor Tales. This week, join me as we head to Ohio to check out a bantam that is named Harvey, named after the previous owner, and it has very special meaning to the current owner, Emily.
They were built back in the 50s. And this one is actually Harvey. When I was a little girl, I used to drive this tractor around steam shows. It was on loan to my family from Harvey Klotz, who was a dear friend of ours. And when I outgrew it, it was about the time his grandchildren were getting old enough to drive it, so hence it went back to his house. And we brought it home last August. Harvey's come home to land. And yeah, he's my little sweetheart. Usually get very emotional with Harvey. They actually made all kinds of equipments for that to work in your garden, in your yard. And when you stop to consider how little the tractor is, it was pretty big step up from pushing, you know, push mower or reel mower. You actually got to ride. But yeah, they just had small little mower decks to them that you could get snow plows and sickle bars and all kinds of stuff for them. So it'll start going to shows this year, and If my grandson's there, that's who'll be driving it. No, it's not original. It's been repainted at least once, because when I was a little girl, it got repainted when we had it, and they've repainted it since because the wheels are now blue instead of silver. We had it silver. So it's been repainted at least once. It'll probably get repainted again just so it looks a little perkier than what it is right now. Two speeds forward, one reverse, and high gear is not fast. I think you can walk faster than Harvey goes in high gear. And it actually, when I had it the first time, it had some clutch issues, so my dad actually, you know, revamped that side of it, and that is still on there. I still drive it. It's not pretty, but I still drive it.
Well, it was a long week of Pro Farmer Crop Tour, but as the West battled the East, what areas produced the most disappointment and what areas saw some surprises? We have boots on the ground as we hit the fields next.
U.S. Farm Report is produced and distributed by Farm Journal Broadcast. Welcome back to U.S. Farm Report. Trusted, timely tradition.
Well, there's no doubt it was hot on Crop Tour this week. The western leg of the tour really struggled with that heat all week, but as scouts made their way down through South Dakota, Nebraska, western Iowa, and then up through Minnesota, how much damage did the drought do this year? Farm Journal's Michelle Rook hit the fields to find out.
Both heat and drought stress came together this year on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour to produce a crop that was highly variable, making it tough to achieve big yields.
Scouts started out in South Dakota, where Sherman Newland says they saw an improved drought picture from 2022.
Last year was a complete drought, hit hard area, you know, very low yields and everything.
However, there was variability, and for some rains didn't start until the end of July. That early dryness may have impacted yield.
Corn, I think some of the rains may have been too late. It might help test weight, but you know, the ear length tip is already set, the round is already set, and so I don't know how much it will help the corn.
Plus, Newland thinks yield could be further cut by this week's heat.
The dryness, you know, coming up could shrink the grain depth a little bit and affect it some.
The soybean crop was also under stress, but did show better potential.
Our high counts are really strong. It's definitely above what we would normally see in the state here.
This has been a familiar sound in Nebraska this year, with many farms applying near to record amounts of irrigation water, and they aren't done yet.
It's been nonstop since we've been planting. A lot of pre-watering early on, too. We just got to keep pumping as much water as we can.
Add the excessive heat, and pivots have not been able to keep up, which is trimming top-end yield on corn.
I think we're definitely going to take some off the top. Probably test weight in the corn for sure.
Irrigated soybeans still look healthy with good potential, but farmers expect yields to be off of average.
I think before this hot spell on our irrigated stuff, we had a chance to be a little bit above our APH, and I think this hot spell kind of bring us back down into that area and level.
And with the lingering drought in Nebraska, dry land corn has suffered again this season.
But I think what we're counting for the corn crop is probably, if we get a 150 yield, I'm guessing it's probably going to be close to that.
Soybeans holding up better under drought stress, but he says they won't finish well with the heat. Last year, western Iowa was hit hard by drought, and some areas continue to struggle. Roger Servine says that led to variability in their corn yield checks, and it's what he's expecting on his own farm.
Corn, we will have farms that do 140, and we will have farms that do 200. So if we end up in that 170, using round figures here of 170 bushel, that'll be a win.
It would be a win because Servine is concerned about the impact of this week's extreme heat.
Since we haven't had rain in August, then it's going to start just cannibalizing that stock. But I think we can safely say we've lost 20 to 30 bushel easily on a lot of acres.
While soybeans are also struggling with the late season heat, especially where it's dry, there's more optimism about the resilience of this crop.
I guess obviously we're hot right now, but we started August cooler and wet, so the beans were getting those August rains that make good yield.
In Minnesota, farmer Brad Nelson was disappointed with the soybeans he found in his home state, as he found a lot of two bean pods.
Well, it's a third less yield, you know, out of that plant. Almost, maybe not quite a third, but probably 20-25% anyway.
And there's also a great deal of variability due to the spottiness of the rains.
It's been popcorn showers all summer long, so it's made winners and losers and in counties.
Scout and Nebraska farmer Tim Gregerson says drought also hit the corn. Plus, the heat played a role, and he gauges it by the lack of uniformity, or what he calls bouncy tassels, and the girth of the ears.
But if I can put my hand and touch my middle finger with my thumb on these ears of corn, that means that we don't have the depth there to have a monster yield, okay? This doesn't have the depth of kernel that's going to finish above average this year.
So the statewide corn and soybean yield are likely headed below historical averages, just like much of the Western Corn Belt. I'm Michelle Rook for U.S. Farm Report.
Thanks, Michelle. Well, Iowa and Illinois were both big question marks going into this week, from a strong start in Indiana to a disappointing finish in Iowa. We'll hit the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour next. Well, as Pro Farmer Crop Tour scouts started in the east, the heat really wasn't that bad, but it blasted them in Illinois on Wednesday. And as we found out, it didn't feel like walking fields. The high humidity made it feel more like swimming to sample fields in the east this week. And in Iowa, it's clear drought is taking a toll on the crop.
And I'm gonna stretch this out.
Uh-huh.
Field by field.
Because of the moisture, they're gonna end up with a pretty decent corn crop, it looks like, out of this field.
Ear by ear.
Pretty decent ears, just lack some length.
Day one of Pro Farmer Crop Tour produced some surprises.
Just a little bit of kernel tip back there.
But overall, scouts saw a more consistent crop than they did last year in Ohio.
Good solid corn crop, especially for the state. Ohio's typically a hit or miss state, and it looks like most of the areas hit this year based on what we've seen.
May and June were dry, but in July, it finally started to rain. And once it did, the corn and soybean crops in Ohio really started to take off.
I think overall, I think it's going to be a better crop than we had last year. In particular, I don't know if it's going to be as good of a crop as what we had in 2021. We're set up to have an above average crop.
As day two of Pro Farmer Crop Tour sprawled across Indiana in the east,
pull out of here.
Scouts found a solid stand count in corn, and in soybeans,
I count 39.
The pod counts were also strong, but for Eastern Leg agronomist Mark Bernard, Indiana's corn crop wasn't impeccable on his route.
Well, a little bit disappointing on the corn side relative to what the hype was when we came out here. On this route anyway, on the first four samples, it hasn't really blown me away.
According to Pioneer agronomist who covers Northeast Indiana, he still thinks his area of Indiana will see an above average crop.
What percentage of that above average will be seen at this point?
The biggest concern right now, tar spot.
In my geography, I'm seeing it significantly higher levels than what I've seen in the past years.
As scouts waded through Illinois on Wednesday,
I think as we keep getting further west, the beans are getting better.
They were less than impressed with fields surrounding Bloomington, Illinois.
The Bloomington area was very dry earlier in the year, created shorter nodes in the soybeans, thereby shorter soybeans.
Megan Yandel has been on crop tour for 13 years, and she says the dry weather in June definitely took a bite out of the crop here.
I personally thought that we would lose some of the top bushels just based off what the weather has been, and we're definitely seeing that.
The area was dry from May 7th to the end of June, but the derecho that blasted across Illinois on June 29th was a game changer.
I think across the whole state of Illinois, it really propelled everything forward and probably saved some people from having failures.
Pockets of sudden death syndrome and Phytophthora are showing up slightly across Illinois soybean fields. In the corn, Pettit says tar spot was confirmed in Iroquois and Livingston counties just this week.
At this stage in the game, I'm not overly concerned. Other than going into harvest, if it does blow up, we could get some potential stalk issues.
But with heavy morning dew and the fact 2021 was also a dry June, similarities and warning signs are starting to pop up.
I would say, in my opinion, we're 8 to 10 days early from really determining whether it's going to still be problematic this year or not. I mean, there's still a good 35% to 40% of that yield left to be packed in those kernels from a starch and dry weight standpoint.
What scouts saw on the final day of Pro Farmer Crop Tour in the east,
it's good corn, but the ear count wasn't very good,
was an extremely variable crop.
That's what they call that.
Peter Meyer describes this Iowa crop as the most variable and the most mature
he's seen in his 17 years of crop tour.
This crop just didn't get enough moisture, and it ran out of energy.
Meyer says while signs of stress are visible, he's actually surprised how well the crop has withstood such little rain.
It's certainly not a disaster by any stretch of the imagination, but when you look at ears at what the potential could have been with some rain, it really could have been a monster.
Adding to the complication, the variability that's also showing up in soybeans.
I don't really know if it's SDS or if it's just it's their time to go.
And as you can see, fields of yellow soybeans are just another sign of the challenges eastern Iowa farmers have faced this year.
It's interesting because you'll come upon one field where I would say to maybe 50% of it is this yellow color, and the field is obviously dying.
The biggest concern for beans now, not just the heat, but one weather model pointing to little rain in this area until September 8th.
Now we're sitting here with going to be two or three days of 120 degrees heat index. Beans are an August crop, so this crop is not finishing very well.
So now that we've had a look at Pro Farmer Crop Tour this week and know the final numbers from Pro Farmer, what does it mean for the markets? We'll talk with Brian Grady and Chip Flory coming up next.
The 2023 Pro Farmer Crop Tour on U.S. Farm Report is brought to you by Pioneer. Pioneer combines cutting-edge research with one of the largest local testing programs in the industry to help farmers succeed. Pioneer, what's next happens here. And by BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Welcome back to U.S. Farm Report this weekend. All right, you just saw the West with Michelle Rook. You just saw the East and what scouts saw there. So now, Iowa really was a big question mark. You mentioned that this crop is going backwards. You know, how would you describe things in Western Iowa, Chip?
In Western Iowa, really? Can I go ahead and do that? To me, it looked like a crap sandwich. Looked good in the Southwest, looked good in the Northwest, and it was crap in West Central.
That is the perfect analogy.
You're welcome.
Do you have an analogy for Eastern Iowa? Can you beat that?
No, but there's more uncertainty now than there was going into crop tour.
Yeah.
A lot more uncertainty, and I think that is critical when you're talking about the number one corn-producing state and the number two soybean-producing state.
Yeah,
you said it going into this, there were some big question marks. And still, if you know, are we seeing this crop go backwards? You know, you're concerned about that. But even if we have an average crop in Iowa, Chip, does it change the stocks scenario?
An average crop in Iowa, if we can get there and you know, make it look similar to what it was a year ago, I don't think it changes the outlook on corn all that much. We're still going to be looking at a stocks to use ratio in that 14-15%, and I just don't see anything too bullish about a 14-15% stocks to use ratio. Now, soybeans, if it finishes as poorly as I think it might, and we start to take some bushels off of Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, you start to take away from the national average yield, and that bean market is going to be much more sensitive to a change on the supply side than corn.
Yeah, Brian, that's what I was going to ask you next.
Yeah, so corn had cushion coming into the growing season, and the acreage gave us more cushion.
Yep.
Soybeans didn't. Soybean acreage, you know, was down, and now we have question marks and no cushion, and so I think that there may be some changes on the balance sheet there that come about.
But when you look at some of the pictures and the video coming out of some of these routes, farmers may be getting bullish because there are some big question marks there. Do you think that they should be getting bullish right now?
Sell rallies. Don't get overly bullish. Sell rallies is the biggest thing.
Yeah, and it's because of demand. If all of a sudden we see concern over the supply of corn and soybeans in the United States to the rest of the world, if the importers become concerned about that and step in and start buying up in a much bigger way than what they've been doing for that 23-24 marketing year, then you've got demand coming up and you've got supply coming down at the same time. Then maybe we can start to get a little excited about corn. But I've been saying this the whole week, Brian, I think the corn-soybean ratio is going to 3-1. And it could trade there for a very long time.
Well, I'll say this. Brazil grew a record soybean crop. Yeah. Brazil grew a record corn crop. Brazil's still got soybeans left to ship. Brazil's got a whole heck of a lot of corn left to ship, and that's going to impede on the first half of our new crop marketing year, which is when we should be strongest, especially for soybeans.
All right, so wrap us up. What was the biggest surprise for you, though, this week, corn or soybeans, Chip?
I'm going to remember this as a soybean year. Normally, when I'm out on crop tour, I'm thinking about the corn crop. Bean crop is kind of a secondary thought. I'm going to remember the 2023 tour because of how vulnerable this bean crop was at the end of the trip.
Brian, how about on the east?
I think it's corn because of Ohio and how impressive it was. More impressive than Indiana. We moved into Illinois, and it was way more mature than we saw in those first two states. And then Iowa was just an absolute slam the door in your face type of deal. So corn, definitely corn.
And Ohio with the rain. I mean, would you have, going into this crop tour, did you think Ohio would be the shining star in the east?
No, I didn't. I knew Ohio, I had a good idea that Ohio had a good crop. Not as good as what we saw.
Well, that was a good note to end on. Brian, Chip, thank you both. All right, we need to take a quick break, and then we'll have much more right here on U.S. Farm Report. In Iowa this week for Crop Tour, I talked to a farmer about the carbon pipeline planned for Iowa and through his land. It's a topic generating strong reaction in South Dakota and Iowa. Some are for it, while other landowners are against it. And it's also on the minds of our viewers as we find out in customer support this week.
From Kathy Rosenbaum in Glassford, Illinois, what is your feeling about the Wolf CO2 pipeline being planned? It is to capture carbon dioxide from ADM's Iowa ethanol production, compress it, and send it by pipeline from Iowa to Decatur, Illinois. It is to be stored underground in Mount Simon Geologic Formation in the Illinois Basin. Many are concerned about the safety of the pipeline and underground storage of the CO2. Also, is this project really necessary? It's really hard to answer this without being perceived as insensitive, but like most Americans and farmers, I'm largely indifferent. For projects involving voluntary or involuntary use of private land, the public has three basic attitudes. NIMBY, not in my backyard, where landowners directly affected oppose vehemently. YIMBY, yes, in my backyard. This is a new and smaller attitude in areas where either economic development needs like a factory or high-density housing such as apartments are desperately needed to ensure any future for the community. And YIOBY, I thought this one up. Yes, but in other backyards. This is the largest group. Projects like pipelines, transmission lines, solar arrays are bitterly and usually unsuccessfully opposed, but only by those affected. My experience is you don't see any citizens who live out of eyesight of a project at a public meeting when such projects are proposed. And no neighbor in his right mind would speak up in support. In this case, the CO2 pipeline is strongly but discreetly supported by farmers, especially in Iowa, so that ethanol plants there can stay open with lower emissions. However, if you think ethanol is not truly green, then carbon capture simply prolongs a harmful technology. Now, we've had about 7,000 miles of CO2 pipelines in use safely for years. CO2 is transported at higher pressures than natural gas, but it doesn't explode. The largest dangers with pipelines are their natural enemies, which is farmers with excavators. We farm ground when a pipeline was installed, and my experience is it takes at least a decade or more for the strip not to be noticed on the yield map, but it does go away. Subterranean storage of CO2 has a long history of minimal risks. Summing up, pipelines affect less than 1%, but it affects them 100%. The reality is the rest of us are YIOBYs.
Thanks, John. Well, what's one way to connect kids to the farm? What about adoption? And no, I'm not talking about adopting kids, adopting
cows. We'll tell you about this unique program and how you can get involved next. Well, something a little different from Crop Tour this week. It's a program that's opening the door to connect kids to the farm through adoption, but not in a way that you might think. And last year, it impacted 1.2 million students worldwide. It's Discover Dairy's Adopt a Cow program. It's a free program that gives students an inside look at dairy. Each classroom that enrolls in the Adopt a Cow program is paired with a calf from a dairy farm. Teachers and students then receive photos, video updates, and activity sheets throughout the school year that allow them to watch their calf grow. The Adopt a Cow program also offers live virtual chats and farm tours. The chats allow the students to talk directly with the farmer and meet their calves. Last year, more than 40,000 elementary and middle school classrooms, homeschool families, library groups, and more participated in the program, and it was in all 50 states. If you know an elementary teacher or someone else who may want to participate, enrollment is now open for this school year, and you have until September 15th to sign up. What a great idea. Well, thank you for joining this week for our Pro Farmer Crop Tour coverage. You can check out those final numbers and more reaction on agweb.com. Well, that does it for U.S. Farm Report this weekend. Thanks again for watching. Be sure to tune in again next weekend as we work to build on our tradition. Have a great weekend, everyone.
U.S. Farm Report is produced and distributed by Farm Journal Broadcast.